Welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. Graduation season is upon us. Black Hills State's commencement exercises are this Saturday, May 7th. The commencement address is being offered this year by Jody Archambault Gillette. She's an enrolled member of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. She grew up in South Dakota and spent her formative years on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. She went on to graduate from Dartmouth College and, with the help of a Bush Fellowship, continued to the University of Minnesota. She has served as a special assistant to President Barack Obama on Native American Affairs. She also created the White House Native American Affairs Council. Today, she continues her work in the private sector as a policy advisor and advocate. Jody Archambault Gillette, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Hi there. Thank you for having me, and it's a real honor and pleasure to be here.
Did I get everything in that introduction correct? Did I miss any major pieces? There's a lot to cover in your bio, isn't there?
Well, I think you did a pretty good summary.
We'll start there. Let's start inside the White House. How did you end up working for the Obama administration?
I was working on the campaign in 2008. I started in July working on First American for Obama in North Dakota. I was the state director for that constituency and ended up working for the campaign until they pulled out. They pulled out a little bit after September. And so I worked for the campaign, and after they pulled out of North Dakota, they asked if I wanted to go to Minnesota, and I declined because I had asked a lot of people to volunteer and work for the then candidate to get elected, and so I stayed and volunteered for the duration until the election. And then after that, they were looking for the transition team for the president after he won, started looking for folks to come and fill different positions. And so I said I might be interested if I got to go to the White House. It was more of a, I won't go unless I am considered for working at the White House in a way that sort of was like, I don't really want to go, but if I do go, it'd be nice to work at the White House. And it ended up, I ended up interviewing and getting the job.
What was your hesitation?
Well, I live in Bismarck, North Dakota. I had lived there for a number of years, over a dozen years, and graduated from Bismarck High here. Before that is when I lived in Pine Ridge up until about the 10th grade, but made my home up here and have a family and had a dog and bought a house, and so I was pretty much set to continue working on children and family issues here in North Dakota. So it was, that's the hesitation, is that I was working on the campaign not to get a job, but to find a way to improve conditions for Native Americans.
How did you make the decision to say yes then?
I would say that the decision to say yes was that I didn't want to just work at a sort of a lower level government agency. Mm-hmm. I wanted to, in fact, make sure that we made good on the areas that we were making change happen. I wanted to see through what we were talking about on the campaign.
Right.
And I felt like being a part of the president's staff there at the White House would be a pretty effective way, and it seemed like it would be worth possibly moving my family to Washington, D.C. if I got the job.
So once you were there, what were some of the things that you think you brought to the White House from the Dakotas and from your culture of origin, really, that you brought to Washington, D.C. inside the Beltway?
Well, I think the main thing is that I brought honesty, and came out pretty late in my career. I had a lot of experience in the local, state, tribal, federal government institutions and processes. I had previously worked for my tribe as an economic development planner. I'm enrolled at the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, and I also worked with the state of North Dakota and South Dakota on trying to get things done, whether it's ag or building community centers or looking at ways to get housing grant funding, and more recently, you know, for a dozen years, I had been doing technical assistance for children and family issues on a number of different fronts. And so when I came to the White House, I had a lot of experience in how systems work, and I also saw a lot of things that were not fair and just didn't seem just. And that sort of brought me to a different, I guess, kind of understanding of my role in the White House, is that a lot of people in Washington, D.C. don't have the experience of what it's like to be a Native American, growing up on an Indian reservation, and then also trying to work with different kinds of governing systems.
Did you find that was a frustration for you in Washington, or mainly an opportunity?
It was an opportunity because because I came to Washington, D.C. with the understanding that I was only going to be there if things were going to be improved. You know, there wasn't going to be I wasn't trying to move my family there for good. I wasn't trying to build a career in the in the federal government. And so my entire sort of focus was to get meaningful change and effective change. And what happened was, people loved it. People liked to hear what truly was happening on the ground. And when I say what truly is happening on the ground, it's hard to reach that kind of level of detail, because the oftentimes when decision makers go out, and this happens, a lot. I wouldn't say all the time, but when principals come out to outside of D.C. and they visit places, everyone really puts on the best kind of, they prepare, they clean up, they put all the successful things. You know, you want to prove that your programs are effective and they're working. And so from the decision of where you're going to what's going to happen and who's going to be in the room and how, you know, all the logistics of that interaction are scripted in a sense.
Right.
And so there's not very much, government officials, bureaucrats are not going to bring, well, this doesn't work and that doesn't work and this is an awful experience and I don't know why we do that. It's very bureaucratic is what it is. And so you don't, you want to keep your job, so you don't say everything that's wrong. You get to say some of the things, but usually it's pretty, you don't get to see. I mean, I never worked for the federal government. I never worked for anybody but my tribe or nonprofit. And in order to get the attention and in order to work with different systems, it's really hard. It's people won't pay attention to you. People can ignore you. And to get the kind of attention and service that had been promised to us through treaties, had been, it's part of even interacting with the state governments. There's good experiences there. There's also bad experiences for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And the people at the top don't hear that. And so I felt like I was blessed in that, I could kind of call it when I saw that, well, that's not actually what has happened. And it's not, it wasn't like I just graduated from college or I was really inexperienced or young. I mean, we had gotten progress. We had gotten to change some of the things, like in North Dakota, we worked on altering, amending the Medicaid plan so that tribes could get access to case management dollars.
Mm-hmm.
For mental health, and yeah, that's hard. Is it? But we were able to do it, and we had progress. And that was in my previous position, my working for a nonprofit. But to say that doing anything from the ground level is easy if you just try is an understatement. It's not that easy. It's I have a lot of respect for people who do. Make incredible progress in a short amount of time, because if you're working on certain issue areas, it's hard to get the kind of attention that's needed.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much. My idea was if I tell the truth and I'm honest, you know, that's something that they might like, they might not like it. Either way, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to just say what my experience has been or what I know to be true. And if that conflicts with other people's senses and notions, then, you know, that's just not going to be, I'm not going to be quiet. but it turned out to be like, that's what's needed. That kind of honesty is what they liked it. And I actually ended up getting promoted for having that kind of insight. I started out there in one position and I ended up as a special assistant, and I answered directly to the president.
Jody, in 2014, you accompanied President Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama on a visit to Standing Rock Reservation in North Dakota. Give me an idea of what that experience was like for you, for the president, and for the people he visited.
Well, I have to say that it was probably one of the best moments in my professional career. The president and the first lady came to the community that my brother lives in. My brother was the chairman at the time, or he still is, but he was newly elected. And they visited the community, a pretty small community, and had a wonderful experience there. They got to attend a powwow, and some of the dancers, you know, were able to interact with them and take pictures, and he gave a speech. It was really amazing, but probably the most remarkable part of the trip was when he was able to sit down with half a dozen Native youth enrolled at Standing Rock, mm-hmm. and just had a conversation with them. He and his wife and the chairman were the only adults in the room besides the photographer, and it was a closed meeting, and the youth, it was both the testament of the president and of the youth that they had such a powerful interaction. And the youth shared some pretty difficult situations that they had experienced in their short lives, mm-hmm. and that was something that really touched the president. And I this is nothing that's not already in the public. You know, the president and the mm-hmm. first lady continued to talk about it in either his speeches or when they do interviews. There was an interview in People magazine, and they said that was, you know, one of the that was a pivotal conversation that they had in the White House, because they just didn't know how many challenges and barriers that the kids were facing. They didn't know, and you would think, in, you know, me being at the White House all of that time, and you know, the, you know, he's engaged with tribal leaders more so than any other president in history, that the level of understanding of what Native children go through would at some point be brought to his attention. Well, it's easy to talk about things and not have a sort of an experience in a life, and I think that just having the testimonies of the children, they talked about different issue areas like, you know, suicide, they talked about homelessness and crowded living conditions, they talked about not being adequately prepared for school, for college, they talked about just different, you know, losing parents.
They told them the truth, like you said.
They told them the truth. Right. You tell them the truth. But, you know, you see statistics about Native Americans, but if you don't actually see a face and hear an experience, I don't think it has the same impact. I mean, you can talk about, you know, suicide is the second leading cause of death for Native youth. You can talk about that, but what does that mean? There were children and young people in that meeting describing for him in pretty, you know, pretty honest detail that, you know, they had lost their friends and they had lost their relatives to suicide. Or one individual lost both of his parents, and he was raising his siblings, his younger siblings, four of them, at the age of 22. And so that kind of experience, I think, changed the way that the president changed the focus of what he wanted to get done in the remainder of the office.
Jody, we have about a minute left, but I wanted to ask you about your grandmother and what mm-hmm. she taught you about sacrifice, because I think that's a beautiful story. I've heard some of it before. I think it's worth repeating. Tell me about your grandmother and what she taught you about sacrifice.
Sure. So one of the ceremonies that we have is the naming ceremony, and so she basically just was able to share with us the story of when she was named. And she said that when she was about 3 or 4 years old, her grandmother dressed her in a penny dress, a dress adorned with pennies, and then gave her a black shawl to carry. And then at the end of the ceremony, her grandmother took her shawl and gave it to another little girl. And my grandmother thought that was her shawl, and so she loved it, and she was pretty upset. But she said after that, she said she really understood that her grandmother was trying to show her the value of generosity. Mm-hmm. That, you know, you can't love things. You really can't love things. You can love people, and you can love experiences, but you can't love a thing. And she taught us that, and she showed us it. She lived it. She didn't have many things. She was not a woman of great wealth. She was a woman she was more loved than anybody that, you know, in my experience I've ever met. She was just so generous. She was, and it was generous with her time. She was generous with her, any possession she had, she would give them away at the drop of a hat. And so that's something that we all strive to, but I don't think we're quite there with her.
something to think about. If you're just tuning in, Jody Archambault-Gillette will present a special lecture this Friday, May 6th at 1 p.m. at Black Hills State University. She will receive an honorary doctorate this weekend at the BHSU commencement ceremonies, where she will give the address. Jody Archambault-Gillette, thank you so much for joining us today. We so appreciate your time.
Sure. Thank you.